Tá? Senhora, cousin, what do you show that you
So in the beginning, as I said in the beginning of this discourse,
cousin, what do you show that you
the Buddha, turns the wheel of Dharma in not long after he got enlightened. He turned the first wheel of Dharma in Varanasi. The turning of the wheel of Dharma on the Four Noble Truths. So if you wish to achieve lasting happiness, and he showed that there is possibility of achieving that, and then he showed the path, the means to that. Therefore, since there is a way out of this suffering, we need to pursue the means to go out of the samsara. And therefore, we need to understand the Four Noble Truths, the Noble Truth of Suffering, Origin, Cessation, and the Path. So in order to understand the Four Noble Truths well, we need to understand the causality in terms of samsara, how we are led into samsara through the origin, and how we are led out of samsara and reaching cessation and nirvana through the path, the true path. And so this is based on the understanding of the law of causality. Now if we think about the law of causality, we'll find that whatever there is to know, everything is dependent on something else, and therefore we have the view of dependency and relativity. And therefore in the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras, this is what is taught. And in the 8th chapter of the Bodhisattva Charyavatara, we came across this line where it says one must engage in the secret of exchanging self and others. And so we need to think about the suffering of others and think of altruism, and especially taking on the suffering of others and giving one's own virtues and good things to others. So for this we need to have a very big courage and determination to do so, and therefore this practice is called the secret practice, the holy secret. So those who take the Buddha to be their refuge, and within the followers of the Buddhas, there are those who say that seeing everything as being in empty of intrinsic existence is nihilism, and therefore the Buddha, when he gave teachings, he gave them according to the needs, according to the interests, the mental predispositions of his disciples. And therefore, there is one set of teaching that the Buddha gave publicly. And then there are certain other teachings which he gave to more advanced students. If he taught them to those who are not mature, then they might criticize the Buddha to be nihilist. And therefore, according to the mental predispositions of the disciples, the Buddha gave the different teachings. And also that this has to do with the merit of the disciples. In the Heart Sutra, I always say that in the Heart Sutra we find the dialogue between Shariputra and Avalokiteshvara. And so when the Shariputra was asking the question, He was actually able to see Avalokiteshvara and therefore was able to ask this question to Avalokiteshvara. And without seeing Avalokiteshvara, there's no way Shariputra could have asked him question. It's not that the Shariputra had some painting of Avalokiteshvara in front of him and he was talking to that. So Shariputra was able to see, they talked to Avalokiteshvara like talking to a person. And then there were Maitreya, Manjushri, and Samantabhadra, and so forth. So these bodhisattvas, if you ask, are these bodhisattvas and not Buddhas? And so we need to differentiate between the common and uncommon levels of sentient beings. And so on the common level, for ordinary sentient beings, on that level we have these beings as bodhisattvas. And then when it comes to the unique Mayana position, then there is the position of Tantra, then we have a chief deity of a mandala, and then the rest of the deities and the mandala itself, the bodhisattvas, female and male and female bodhisattvas, and then also the Buddhas, male and female, are emanated by that principal deity of the mantra, mandala. And then, therefore, we have various manifestations of the Buddha, manifestations of his five aggregates, form, feelings, discrimination, or perception, compositional factor, and consciousness. And so we have to understand that these are the basis on the level, at the ordinary level, these are the basis for transformation. And therefore, so those aggregates which come about through karma and delusion are what we need to purify. And so this impure, the body and mind, the constituent factors, the sources of consciousness and so forth, are what needs to be purified. And therefore, to represent that, we have all the Tathagatas and the male and female Tathagatas, as well as bodhisattvas, male and female and so forth, in the mandalas. And therefore, we have the Buddhas and then the bodhisattvas in the mandala. And then they're in the mandala practice of Tantra, we also switch between the different deities, one becoming the central deity and then other going to the other position and so forth. And therefore, so on from the common view of Mahayana, then bodhisattvas, Avalokiteshvara, Manjushri and so forth are bodhisattvas, but from the uncommon view, they are Buddhas. Therefore, they appear to people who have pure karma. And then when it comes to Tantra, the Buddha himself appeared in the form of a monk, celibate monk, and then gave the teachings. And then he gave teachings to the assembly of beings. And then there are some tantric teachings in which the Buddha appeared as the chief deity of a mandala for an individual, for a particular individual, in accordance with the karmic connection and their aspiration and prayers, as well as their predispositions and their faculty. And so there's no way somebody else who doesn't have that compatible, that kind of compatible predispositions and faculty and so forth can have access to such a deity and mandala. And therefore, the Tantra, usually I say that there are teachings of the Buddha which are meant for very specific disciples, and particularly for And then there are the common teachings, the general teachings of the Sutrayana, which are given in the public. And therefore, in the when we come across the teachings of extensive lineage and the profound view lineage, and then also the blessing practice lineage, and therefore Tantra seems to be meant for very specific disciples who are able to do those practices, and therefore we have the term the blessing lineage of the practice in connection with the Tantra. So, so the practices that we do in within the context of the blessing lineage of the practice come and also within the profound extensive lineage of the path, and then the profound view. Sometimes people seem to make this difference that the practice blessing lineage is meant for and is more profound, and therefore the profound view lineage and the extensive contact lineage are not so important. That's not the case at all. That shows your ignorance. And therefore there are many levels of the teaching of the Buddha. So we need to know the complete teaching of the Buddha, the big picture, how the Buddha has given the first turning of the wheel of the Dharma, and then how he turned the second turning of the wheel of Dharma, and then, as we find mentioned in the Kalachakra Tantra, the Buddha, when he gave the Pariparamita Sutras, he also gave the Kalachakra Tantra. So, of course, there are different interpretations of these lines. And some scholars, like Kirusangi Narsangyatso, say that just as the Buddha gave the Prajaparamita Sutras, taught the Prajaparamita Sutras in Gridhakuti Rajgriha, likewise, and towards the end of his life, just before passing away, he gave the Kalachakra Tantra. So, of course, when it comes to the secret teachings, we can have the different disciples, such as Ananda and so forth, numerous numbers of Ananda. But these have to do with secret teachings. Now, in the third turning of the wheel of the Dharma, the Buddha emphasized luminous nature of the mind, which is also what the Mahayana Uttara Tantra of Maitreya deals with. And so many Tibetan scholars say that they have to also do with the tantric practice, leading the practitioners to Tantra. And so many of the teachings of the Buddha are given publicly, and there are teachings which are, and then there are teachings meant for specific disciples who are matured enough. So perhaps during the time of the Buddha also this happened, and then in Tibet also we have great masters who have had visions of the different deities, and then received teachings from those deities. So in the case of the Dalai Lamas, the first Dalai Lama had visions of deities, and then the second Dalai Lama, of course, had visions even at his in his childhood. And then the fifth Dalai Lama had many visions of deities, pure visions. Not only had he visions, but he also received teachings and instructions, and he got prophecies to write down those teachings as well about doing practices, retreats, and so forth. Amongst my own generation, there were great masters, qualified masters, who had pure visions of deities, and therefore, even in Tibet this had happened, and then in India it must have happened the great masters of India must have had the pure visions of deities. And we may call this like an ear-whispered lineage or teachings which are meant for particularly for specific disciples. Then when it comes to practice, Aryadeva says, all these means of teaching are skillful means used by the Buddha. And then when in the Tantra, there is first the generation stage, and then comes the completion stage practice within the highest yoga Tantra. And so we have to follow the sequence of the practices correctly. And before Tantra, we need to first get rid of preoccupation with this life, and then the preoccupation with next life, and then we need to pursue, generate renunciation, this determination to be free from samsara. And when you have generated that genuine renunciation, then you need to turn your mind towards other sentient beings, see them to be in the same situation as you are, and then generate and cultivate love and compassion, and then bodhicitta. And so, since this is the way we go about, you see, the orderly in practice of the practice of the Dharma. So the pleasures of this life, such as food, clothing, shelter, if we only indulge in these, then we, as human beings, we have the potential to develop our courage and determination to work for the other sentient beings, and we have this intelligence as well. So if you are intelligent, you need to use this potential, this great potential that we have for spiritual growth. We do that, of course. So we need to develop this wisdom, this critical faculty to check the reality, the potential that we have infinitely. And then, with the help of that, we need also to develop love and compassion infinitely. So we have the potential for these. So first you take interest in these, and then you think of pursuing these. In the beginning of your life, you may be full of negativities, negative emotions, totally under the control of them. You may be able to control these negative emotions at the end of your life, in the latter part of your life. Therefore, we need to think about winning or defeating these negative emotions. So we need to think of reaching moksha or liberation, which is total freedom from all these negative emotions. In certain non-Buddhist traditions, moksha refers to some kind of a paradise, but in Buddhism, moksha refers to freedom from total freedom from all the negative emotions by applying the antidote against them. So nirodha means to cease. What you cease is these negativities that you have, negative emotions, by applying the antidote. And so through that antidote, what you reach is the freedom from these negative emotions. So that is called nirodha. And Nagarjuna says, exhausting karma and delusions is liberation. And Nagarjuna says in that verse that the distorted conceptions must be dissolved within the into this nature reality of the mind, according to Kundalama Rinpoche, which says that. So you, this last line can be interpreted either in instrumental case or to mean that the emotions, the negative emotions, and mental constructions, reifications can be dissolved in within this reality of the mind, the emptiness of the mind. So, the mental aberrations should be dissolved within this emptiness of the mind. So with regard to attaining higher rebirth, it is not only what Buddhism teaches, but it seems that all the religious, major religious traditions do have such teachings for higher rebirth, such as Islam, Christianity, Judaism, and Hinduism. And if the followers of these traditions, if they follow the teachings well, correctly, then they also create the causes for higher rebirth in the next life, although they may they have different ways of understanding from their own side. And then we have within the teaching of the Buddha, there are three vehicles, Shravakas, Prajnaputras, and Bodhisattva vehicles. And there is also mention of the vehicles of gods and humans. Most of the religious traditions of the world come under this category. So we have the humanitarian vehicles. Whether we talk about whether they accept future life or not, next life or not, they have the practices for attaining higher rebirths by following some moral principles. And then in the non-Buddhist traditions, they have the practice to lead to higher planes of existence by seeing the fault of the desire realm, the desire or attachment of the desire realm and so forth, and then pursuing the single-point concentration of the higher realms. So that are called the Brahma realm, the Brahma vehicle. Now here we are talking about a religion which leads us to liberation. Now the actual path leading to that goal is understanding or the wisdom realizing selflessness. So when you are able to develop the single-pointed concentration coupled with this wisdom realizing selflessness, then you have the combination of these two, the union of the single calm abiding and vipassana. Now, in order to develop this, we need single-pointed concentration, and for single-pointed concentration, you need to develop mindfulness. Whatever you are meditating on, you need to be able to fix your mind mindfully on that object, and therefore, single-pointed concentration, for that, we need to build mindfulness. A powerful mindfulness, and therefore, for the practice of mindfulness, we have moral practice of morality, keeping the precepts. For example, in the case of the Mulasarvastivada tradition, we have 253 precepts for fully ordained monks. So we need to, the monks need to be mindful of their these precepts. Whether they are committing those negativities, misdeeds, which are naturally negative, or whether they are going against their precepts. So they must restrain themselves. So for these precepts and the morality, moral precepts are not meant for punishing you, but then they are meant for achieving a higher goal. And therefore, morality and is the practice of morality is self-discipline, disciplining oneself. So, for example, if you are sick, you need to listen to the advice of your doctors. And the doctor may have advised you to do something, but you need to be mindful of what the doctor has said and whether you are doing according to his advice or not. And therefore, Shila has the meaning of tranquility, giving some tranquility. Therefore, you need to practice the morality, restraining yourself. And then within morality, there is the pratimoksha, bodhisattva, and tantric practices. So within the pratimoksha, we have those precepts for lay people as well as monastics, monks and nuns. So we have here monks and nuns, fully ordained monks and nuns. This all is asking.
Don't waste tea.
Whose tea is that? So, of course, the bhikshus and bhikshunis. The bhikshuni ordination within the Mulasarvasavada tradition is not still extant, and you cannot force the bhikshuni ordination. So, bhikshuni ordination of the Mulasarvastavada tradition didn't come to Tibet from India. We need to have a bhikshuni, a qualified bhikshuni, who presides over the ordination as the upadeya, the precept master, and because we didn't have that, this ordination didn't happen in Tibet. And in the Thai tradition also, there's no bhikshuni. And then we have the bhikshuni tradition, bhikshunis from in the Chinese lineage. And therefore, we have both bhikshus and bhikshunis in this assembly, as well as novice monks and nuns. So they have their own vows. Now, we'll do the layperson's vows. So it's up to you, the individuals, whether you take those, the layperson's vow or not. Don't say that you have been to teaching of Dalai Lama and Dalai Lama has forced these lay vows to you, on you. So it's you have the freedom whether you want to take these upasaka vows or not. So in order to take the upasaka vows, first, we'll do the upasaka vows for lay people only. So the best of the upasaka vows is taking the five vows, which are keeping the highest vow within the lay persons is celibacy vow, even as a lay person, which means not engaging in any kind of sexual act. Or you can take the five vows and then be a householder as well. And so the five vows are not killing, avoiding killing, avoiding taking what is not given. And so if whether you take vow or not, if you kill a human being, you will land in jail. So refraining from this act of killing by taking a vow with a wish to become enlightened and doing that with by fearing law has big difference. They have big differences. And then sexual misconduct. If you, for example, commit rape, if you, then you will again have to face the law. And so again, with regard to lie, telling lie, this lie is a grave sort of lie, claiming to be very highly realized and so forth. So once I was in America and somebody came to me and said he was Jesus Christ. So this kind of lie seems to be this grave lie. And then amongst the practitioners of the Tibetan Buddhism, there may be people who claim to be bodhisattvas and so forth. I once met somebody who told me that he or she dreamt of Buddhas and bodhisattvas, and then asked me if this person himself had reached the first bodhisattva ground or not. And I skillfully told him that there are many other qualities that you develop, that you attain to when you reach the first bodhisattva ground as well, such as being able to have the ability to move 100 different world systems and so forth. And so if you intentionally tell such lie in order to deceive others, you are going against this fourth precept. So for ordinary people, usually there is no such risk, but there's risk. This kind of risk is there for the people who sit on high thrones, like lamas, and pretending to have high realizations and so forth. So most of you may not have this risk of telling this kind of lie. And for lay people, the one difficult thing is to avoid drinking alcohol, perhaps. So I usually tell this story about my precept master. When I was sitting down to prepare for the Jenang, I told them that I became a bhikshu in 1954. It's been almost 60 years since I became a bhikshu, and I asked the monks, Theravada monks, I told the monks that I am senior bhikshu. That I'm an elder. So I was ordained as a bhikshu by my teacher Ling Rinpoche, and one old Tibetan man took the five layperson's vows from him. And my teacher himself told me this. And then after giving the vow, that Ling Rinpoche explained these five precepts. And then when he came to explaining about not drinking, this old man, Tibetan old man, was rubbing his head and then scratching his head and then told Ling Rinpoche that he cannot give up drinking alcohol. And so Ling Rinpoche very kindly and skillfully told him that he should not take too much alcohol, but very little alcohol. So, I would also say to you here who are going to take these five precepts that it's best if you can give up drinking, but if you cannot, you should not drink to the point of getting drunk, but you can take a little bit of alcohol, first sniff the alcohol, and then drink, but don't sip, don't gulp the glass of alcohol and get drunk. And so you are taking these five precepts in order to reach nirvana, which is to say that to become free from all the negative emotions. And in order to reach that goal, you think of, you determine to take the five precepts. So, of course, at this point, we are not able to combat the negative emotions right away, but we need to do the practices which leads us to that, being able to combat them. So those who are taking this Upasaka vows, the lay people, please make three prostrations to the Buddha, the founder of the teaching. So touch your folded hands to your three places, forehead or crown, throat and heart, and then make three prostrations. And then make three prostrations to me, from whom you are taking this vows. Now, if you can, just kneel on your right knee, please. If you have no problem, kneel on your right knee. So, please repeat these lines. What you are saying is that you are taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And mainly, you are taking refuge in the Dharma jewel. So Dharma comprises of the freedom from all the negative emotions, negativities, and then the path that leads to that goal. In other words, true cessation and true path make up the jewel, Dharma jewel. So what you're saying is not just leaving the Dharma jewel up there somewhere, but then you think of actually developing that Dharma jewel within yourself and ultimately to become a Buddha, a fully enlightened person. And so with this in mind, you take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, and then on the basis of that, you are determined to keep these five precepts, and so and have this motivation to reach and liberation and omniscient ultimately, and think of keeping this. Master, please pay attention to me. I now by this name from this time on, as long as I'm alive, seek refuge in the Buddhas, the best of the bipeds. I seek refuge in the Dharma, the best of freedom from attachment. I seek refuge in the Sangha, the best of congregations. Master, please consider me as an Upasaka until my death. Repeat again, Master, please pay attention to me. I, known by this name, from this time on, and as long as I am alive, seek refuge in the Buddhas, the best of bipeds. I seek refuge in the Dharma, the best of freedom from attachment. I seek refuge in Sangha, the best of congregation. Master, please consider me as Upasaka until my death. Now, at the end of this third repetition, when you say, please consider me as a devout Upasaka, an Upasaka, I will snap my fingers, and at that point, feel convinced that you have received the five precepts, the complete set of the five, complete. Five Master, please pay attention to me. I know by this name. From this time on, as long as I am alive, seek refuge in the Buddha, as the best of bipeds, seek refuge in the Dharma, the best of freedom from attachment, seek refuge in the Sangha, the best of congregations. Master, please consider me as an Upasaka until my death. Okay. Thank you. Sit down, please. So with regard to the five precepts, they passed on our hearts. Those who took these five precepts, just as they have taken and kept these five precepts, I will also follow suit. Just make this determination and motivate yourself to be a good upasaka. Now, in order to reach liberation, you have taken these five precepts which pertain to the practice of morality, the training of morality. And then we'll do the generation of bodhicitta. And so again here, imagine the Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha himself in person. As it is said, where there is faith, there is Buddha there. And so, in Tantra, in one of the Tantra texts, it is said that we have the body, a gross body, speech, and mind. So this body that we have, and then our speech, which is related to this body, and also a mind related to this body. So these are the gross body, speech, and mind. So on the basis of these three, we talk about Thai, Cambodians, Laos, Indonesians, and Singaporeans, Malaysians, and
all these
so forth.
Koreans, Japanese, all these.
So Tibetans, Koreans, Japanese, and so forth.
Grosser level of body and speech and mind.
We talk about all these nationalities on the grosser level of mind. And then after death, so in certain cases there are no bardos, the intermediate state after death and the next birth, but some do have intermediate states. So sometimes it is said that the intermediate state is similar to, resembles the where you're going to be reborn. And so that bardo state, in the bardo state you have a subtle body, speech, and mind. So we have a dream body, and when we faint, become unconscious, there is an energy, there is still a very
consciousness.
There is a consciousness at the unconscious level when we faint. So there is a state of consciousness in our mind at the time of when we faint. And then together with that mind, we have there is an energy. In our text, there is mention of wind energy or prana. Maybe it's better to call it energy. And then within that, there are different levels of subtlety. And the subtle most is when we die at the time of the what is known as the clear light of death. And at which stage, clinically, you are dead, declared to be dead. Because the brain, this brain death happens because the brain doesn't get blood anymore and it dies. So there are some people in our records, we have 30 or 40 people who were clinically dead according to doctors, but their body still remains fresh without giving foul smell or losing the brightness and so forth. So they could stay fresh for the 1, 2, 3 weeks. And so some scientists are paying attention to this phenomenon and doing research on it. So they put some kind of electrodes on the dead body and see what changes are happening. And so for the last 10 years, they are doing some research and investigation into this phenomenon. And there's no explanation from scientists themselves. But from the how do we explain this from tantric point of view? Our gross body, our gross mind and wind, this energy are related with our brain, and so at this stage of clinical death, this has ceased. But the subtlemost, the wind and mind and energy are still in the body. So we need to still do more research, because what is known as a pervading wind, when they have dissolved, since the pervading wind energies have already been dissolved, so this subtlemost mind seems not to have any connection with this gross body, but why the mind still remains in this body? We need to do some research. So, in the praise of Master Tsongkhapa, it is said that when Tsongkhapa attained this the clear light of death and attained Dharmakaya on the basis of that, and his body became a ball of light and so forth, is mentioned. And then there was one lama in Orissa, Tibetan settlement, and when he was sick, he was very... he had very poor health, physically very weak, but when he died, he gained some brightness and luster in his body and face after clinical death. And so, such things from our point of view are explained and on the basis of this clear, the subtlemost mind and energy still remaining in the body. So it is not death, but in the dying process. So we make this difference between dying and in being in the dying process. So after the 80 conceptions have ceased, and then you go through the three visions of white, red, and blackish near attainments, and then you have reached this clear light of death. So you are still in the process of dying. So that clear light, mind, or consciousness, and the energy together with it. So the energy is this subtle body and subtle speech. And then the mind, the consciousness, is the subtle mind. And so when it comes to that level of subtlety, then they are of one nature. The mind and the energy, body, speech, and mind are of one nature and of one taste. So on the basis of the movement, we talk about the energy, and then on the basis of cognitive nature, we talk about the mind. So there is no difference in the nature as such. So when we talk about purifying negativities, we have to do it on the basis of that very subtle mind and energy. And that subtle mind is developed into wisdom, realizing emptiness and the path, and then serve as antidote to overcome the defilements and the obscuration to knowledge. The gross mind cannot do that. And so the meditation, which is called the vajra-like concentration, has to be that very subtle mind. And so Master Jamyang Sheba has said that the subtlest obscuration to knowledge cannot be overcome except through the highest yoga tantra. So when you attain the total freedom from all defilements that are within our minds by using that subtle mind and subtle energy and developing that subtle mind into the wisdom realizing emptiness and serving as antidote, then the next moment is the omniscient state of mind. And therefore, you attain Buddhahood on the basis of that very subtle, the subtlest mind and energy. So on the level of that subtlest mind and energy, our body, speech, and mind are of one nature. And therefore, that mind and energy, when it transforms into a Buddha, then the body, speech, and mind of a Buddha also are of one nature. And therefore, we talk about one taste of body, speech, and mind in that state. And then we also talk about the three secrets of the Buddha being indivisible. And so it is said that. So we pray and we come across this line in the King of Prayers. On one atom, there is Buddhas as numerous as the number of atoms. And so this is possible. And then, as I said earlier, that where there is faith, there is a Buddha. It's not just talking some kind of a rhetoric, using some kind of rhetoric, but it is something which is a fact that this can happen. And therefore, now here, imagine the Buddha who has attained the four Buddha bodies, and then surrounded by the bodhisattvas, the eight bodhisattvas, and so forth. And so now let's read through the second chapter of Bodhisattva Charyavatara. So we have to read from the beginning of chapter 2 to 22nd chapter of the 22nd verse of the 3rd chapter, just before saying, just as the previous Suttagathas and gave birth to awakening mind and so forth. So please read in your own languages, Chinese or Tibetan or English. So His Holiness is. So read from the beginning of second chapter to the 22nd verse, end of the 22nd verse, which says, "And until they pass away from pain, may I also be source of life for all the realms, variety of beings, varied beings that reach unto the ends of space."
Nishtanir.
So imagine the Buddha and his disciples and bodhisattvas in person, in reality. And therefore, in order to take the bodhisattva, in order to generate bodhicitta and take bodhisattva vows, please do the seven limb practice. In order to see that precious minor offer now to the Tathagatas, to the Second Dharma and stainless jewels, and to the disciples of the Buddha, the ocean of excellence, whatever flowers and fruits there are, and whatever kinds of medicine, whatever jewels exist in this world, and whatever clean, refreshing water, likewise gem encrusted mountains, forest groves, quiet and joyful places, heavenly trees bedecked with flowers and trees with fruit-laden branches, fragrances of celestial realms, incense, fishing trees and jewel trees, uncultivated harvests and all ornaments that are worthy of being offered, lakes and pools adorned with lotuses and the beautiful cry of wild geese, everything unknown within the limited spheres of space. Creating these things in my mind, I offer them to the Supreme Being, the Buddhas, as well as their children. O compassionate ones, think kindly of me and accept these offerings of mine. Having no merit, I am destitute, and I have no other gifts to offer. O protector, you who think of helping others by your power, accept these for my sake. Eternally shall I offer my bodies to the conquerors and their children. Please accept me, you supreme heroes. Respectfully shall I be your subject. By being completely under your care, I shall benefit all with no fear of conditioned existence. I shall perfectly transcend my previous transgressions, and in the future shall commit no more to very sweetly scented bathing chambers with brilliantly sparkling crystal floors and exquisite blaze with gems, with canopies above glow with pearls. I beseech the Tathagatas and their children to come and bath their bodies from many jeweled vases filled with water, scented and enticing, to the accompaniment of music and song. Let me dry your bodies with incomparable cloths, clean and well anointed with scent, and then may I present these holy beings with fragrant garments of suitable colors. I adorn with manifold ornaments and varied raiments, fine and smooth, and Arya Samandabhadra, Manjukosha, Avalokiteshvara, and all the others, just like polishing pure refined gold, and anoint the Buddha's forms with blades which blaze with light, with the choicest perfumes whose fragrance permeate 1,000,000,000 worlds. And to the highest object of giving, I offer beautiful, well-arranged garlands, as well as enchanting, sweet-smelling flowers, just such as lilies, jasmine, and lotus blooms. Also, I send forth clouds of incense, whose sweet aroma steals away the mind, as well as special delicacies, including the varieties of food and drink. I offer them jeweled lamps arranged on golden lotus buds upon land sprinkled with scented water. I scatter delicate flower petals to those who have nature of compassion. I offer palaces resounding with melodious hymns, exquisitely illuminated by hanging pearls and gems that adorn the infinities of space. Eternally shall I offer to the Buddhas jeweled umbrellas with golden handles and ornaments embellished with rains. Rain standing erect and their shapes beautiful to behold. In addition, a mass of offerings resounding with sweet and pleasing music like clouds that appease the misery of all, each remaining for as long as necessary. And to me, a continuous rain of flowers and precious gems descend upon the reliquaries of the statues and upon all the jewels of Dharma. In the same way as Manjugosha and others have made offerings to the conqueror, similarly do I bestow gifts upon the Tathagatas, the protectors, their children and all. I glorify the oceans of excellence with limitless verses of harmonious praise. May these clouds of gentle eulogy constantly ascend to their presence with bodies as numerous as all atoms within the universe. I prostrate to all the Buddhas of the three times, the Dharma and the Supremacist community. Likewise, I prostrate to the Rekaris, to the basis of awakening minds, to all learned abbots and masters, and to all the noble practitioners. I seek refuge in all the Buddhas until I possess the essence of awakening. I seek refuge in Dharma and in the assembly of bodhisattvas. With folded hands, I beseech the Buddhas and bodhisattvas who possess the great compassion and reside in all directions throughout beginningless cycling in this life and others. Unknowingly, I committed transgressions and ordered them to be done so by others. Overwhelmed by the deception of ignorance, I rejoiced in what was done, but now, seeing these mistakes from my heart, I confess them to the Buddhas. Whatever harmful acts of body, speech, and mind I have done in a disturbed mental state towards the three jewels of refuge, my parents, my spiritual master letters and all the grave wrongs done by me, so thoroughly vile and polluted with an abundance of faults, I openly declare to the guides of the worlds. But I may well perish before all my transgressions have been purified, so please protect me in such a way as will swiftly and surely free me from them. The untrustworthy Lord of Death waits not for things to be done or undone. Whether I am sick or healthy, this fleeting lifespan is unstable. Leaving all, I must depart alone. Yet, through not having understood this, I committed various kinds of wrongdoing for the sake of my friends and foes. My foes will become nothing. My friends will become nothing. I, too, will become nothing. Likewise, all will become nothing. Just like a dream experience, whatever things I enjoy will become a memory. Whatever had passed will not be seen again. Even within this life, brief life, many friends and foes have passed. But whatever unbearable wrongdoing I committed for them remains ahead of me. Thereby, through not having realized that I should suddenly vanish, I committed so much wrong out of ignorance, lust, and hate, remaining neither day or night. Life is always slipping away, slipping by, and never getting any longer. Why would death not come to me, one like me? While I'm lying in bed, although surrounded by my friends and relatives, the feeling of life being severed will be experienced by me alone. When seized by the messengers of death, what benefit will friends and relatives afford? But then my merit alone shall protect me then. But upon that I have never relied. O protector, I, so unconcerned, unaware of such terror as this, accumulated great of negative deal of negative action for the sake of transient life. Petrified is the person today being led to a torture chamber with a dry mouth and dreadful sunken eyes, has and his entire appearance is transfigured. What need to mention the tremendous despair when stricken with this disease of great panic, being clasped by the physical forms of the frightful messengers of death? Who can afford me real protection from this great horror? With terrified, bulging eyes agape, I shall search in every direction for refuge. Upon seeing no refuge anywhere, I shall become enveloped in gloom. If there should be no protection there, then what shall I be able to do? Therefore, I now seek refuge in the Buddhas who protect the world, who strive to shelter all their lives and with great strength eradicate all fear. Likewise, I purely seek refuge in the Dharma when they have realized, which they have realized, clears away the fears of cycling existence, and also in the assembly of bodhisattvas, I, trembling with fear, offer myself to Samantabhata, to Manju Gosha also, I make a gift of my body to the protector of Avalokiteshvara, who infallibly acts with compassion. I utter a mournful cry, please protect this miscreant. In my search for refuge, I cry from my heart for Agashgarbha, Shkritigarbha, and all the compassionate protectors, and I seek refuge in Vajrapani, upon the sight of whom all harmful beings, such as the messengers of death, flee in terror in all directions. Previously, I transgressed your advice, but now, upon seeing this great fear, I go to you for refuge. By doing so, may this fear be swiftly cleared away. If I need to comply with the doctor's advice when frightened by common illness, then how much more so when perpetually diseased by the manifold agitations of desire and so forth? And if all people living on this earth can be overcome by just one of these, and if no other medicine to cure them is to be found elsewhere in the universe, then in the intention not to act in accordance with the advice of the all-knowing physician that can uproot every misery is extremely bewildered and worthy of scorn. If I need to be careful near a small ordinary precipice, then how much more so near the one of deep duration that drops for 1,000 miles. It is inappropriate to enjoy myself thinking that today alone I shall not die, for inevitably the time will come when I shall become nothing. Who can grant me fearlessness? How can I be surely free from this? If I shall inevitably become nothing, how can I relax and enjoy myself? What remains with me now from the terminated experience of the past? Yet through my great attachment to them, I have been going against my spiritual master's advice. Having departed from this life and from all my friends and relatives, if all alone, I must go elsewhere. What is the use of making friends and enemies? How can I be surely freed from unwholesome sources of misery? Continuously, day and night, I should only consider this. Whatever has been done by me through ignorance and unknowing, be it the breaking of vow or deed by nature wrong, I humbly confess it all in the presence of the protectors with folded hands, prostrating myself and again, my mind terrified by the misery to come. I beseech all the guides of the world to Please accept my transgressions and wrongs, since these are not good. In the future I shall do them no more. Gladly do I rejoice in the virtue that relieves the misery of all those unfortunate states and that gives happiness to the suffering. I rejoice in that gathering of virtue that is cause for our heart's awakening. I rejoice in the definite freedom of embodied creatures from the miseries of cyclic existence. I rejoice in the awakening of the Buddhas and also in the spiritual levels of their children. And with gladness I rejoice in the ocean of virtues for developing an awakening mind that wishes all beings to be happy, as well as in the deeds that bring them benefit. With folded hands I beseech the Buddhas of all directions to shine the lamp of Dharma for all bewildered in misery's gloom. With folded hands I beseech the conquerors who wish to pass away to please remain for countless eons and do not leave the world in darkness. Thus, by the virtue collected through all that I have done, may the pain of every living creature be completely cleared away. May I be the doctor, that the medicine, may I be the nurse for all sick beings in the world until everyone is healed. May a rain of food and drink descend to clear away the pains of thirst and hunger, and during the eon of famine, may I myself change into food and drink. May I become an inexhaustible treasure for those who are poor and destitute. May I turn into all things they could need and be placed close beside them. Without any sense of loss, I shall give up my body and enjoyment as well as all my virtues of the three times for the sake of benefiting all. By giving up all, sorrow is transcended, and my mind will realize the sorrowless state. It is best that I now give everything to all beings in the same way at death. Having given this body up for the pleasure of all living beings by killing, abusing, and beating it, may they always do as they please. Although they may play with my body and make it a source of jest and reproach, because I have given it up to them, what is the use of holding it dear? Therefore, I shall let them do anything to it that does not cause them any harm, and when anyone encounters me, may it never be meaningless for them. If in those who encounters me a faithful or angry thought arises, may that eternally become the source for fulfilling all their wishes. May all who say bad things to me or cause me any other harm, and those who mock and insult me, have the fortune to fully awaken. May I be a protector for those without one, a guide for all travelers on the way. May I be a bridge, a boat, a ship for all who wish to cross the water. May I be an island for those who seek one, a lamp for those desiring light. May I be a bed for all those who wish rest, and a slave for all who want a slave. May I be a wishing jewel, a magic verse, powerful mantras, a great medicine. May I become a wish-fulfilling tree and a cow of plenty for the world, just like space and the great elements such as earth. May I always support the lives of all the boundless creatures, and until they pass away from pain, may I also be the source of life for all the realms of varied beings that reach unto the end of space. Stop there.
Chingwa chenpo na namba shindo taba ya simjian pa do meba ya nama nye zu xe yang shu di xin tuan vi te tu pe simjian kam na ramjian niang en da pa do da nye zu xe yang shu.
So next, as it's just like space and the great elements such as earth, may I always support the lives of all boundless creatures, and until they pass away from pain, may I also be the source of life for all the realms of varied beings that reach unto the ends of space. So just as you have made these prayers, you should not leave it just to empty words, but you should think of actually being practical about these prayers. And so you are now going to make that pledge to work for the benefit of others. Whatever good or bad happens to us, our life is very dear to us. So likewise, as long as someone has mind, there's always this wish to be happy and not suffer. And therefore, we need to develop bodhicitta and develop the wisdom realizing emptiness. And so our wish to be happy and not to suffer can be fulfilled through these means. As it is said in the 400 verses of Aryadeva, it says that when you have bodhicitta, although you may be in samsara physically, but mentally, it is like being in nirvana. And therefore, we have this human life, which is an internal condition, and met with the Dharma, and also have this opportunity to practice bodhicitta, which holds others dearer than oneself. So at such a time, just as you have aspired, from now on, I will think that I will practically live a good life, not harming anybody, not to have any malicious thoughts against others, and but help others. So if you compare the benefit, the interest of oneself and others, you should hold the interest of others more important and restrain this selfish motive. And so this is the practice of bodhisattvas, to restrain selfish motive and work for the other sentient beings. And so we have done the seven limb practice, making offerings to the Buddhas and bodhisattvas, and now we have come to the point of taking bodhicitta. So for the benefit of all sentient beings across space, so, and you have this wish to become a Buddha for their benefit, you have developed the aspiring bodhicitta. And then when you pledge that you will not lose this bodhicitta from now on, you are making this pledge. And on a daily basis, you should remind yourself of this pledge and the bodhicitta, and make this experience of bodhicitta fresh within yourself, and never losing its adhesive of nature. And then when you wish to practice engaging in the practice of six perfections are not something to be done when you are happy and not to do when you are not happy, but you should do it all the time, and therefore you should not be lazy, but think of engaging in the bodhisattva practices. And therefore, for this you take bodhisattva vows. So if you just make a pledge to keep the bodhicitta that you have generated without losing it, you are making a pledge to aspiring bodhicitta, to keep the aspiring bodhicitta. But if you take bodhisattva vows, then you need also to know about the 18 root downfalls and the 46 secondary infractions. So the most important thing is to get rid of the selfish motive, selfishness, and not to let yourself under the control of the self-cherishing attitude and grasping at true existence. And so we have two verses. Please kneel on your right knee. So verses 23 and 24 should be repeated three times. So those of you who think that you will be able to keep the bodhisattva vows, you should take the bodhisattva vows. So those of you who have already taken the bodhisattva vows before should also take the bodhisattva vows again here. So those of you who doubt that they may not be able to keep the bodhisattva vows as such, you should not think of taking bodhisattva vows, but think of make the bodhisattva practices your aspiration, that so that you may be able to do them in the future. But think of keeping the bodhicitta and doing whatever you can in terms of keeping it and benefiting others. And so in the space before you, imagine the Buddha surrounded by the Buddha's bodhisattvas and the master Nagarjuna and so forth. Just as the previous Sugatas gave birth to an awakening mind, and just as they successively dwell in the bodhisattva practices, likewise, for the sake of all that lives, do I give birth to an awakening mind, and likewise shall I too successively follow the practices. Just as the previous Sugatas gave birth to an awakening mind, and just as they successively dwelt in the bodhisattva practices, likewise, for the sake of all that lives, do I give birth to an awakening mind, and likewise shall I too successively follow the practices. So at the end of this third repetition now, you may make the pledge to keep aspiring bodhicittas, or those who are courageous enough to take bodhisattva vows and engage in the bodhisattva practices. At the end of this third repetition, when you successively follow the practices, you should think of receiving the bodhisattva vows. If you have caused any decline to bodhisattva vows that you've taken before, imagine that they are recovered. And if you had not taken bodhisattva vows before, you are receiving a fresh set of bodhisattva vows at this point. Just as previous Sugatas gave birth to an awakening mind, and just as they successfully dwelt in the bodhisattva practices, likewise, for the sake of all that lives, do I give birth to an awakening mind, and likewise shall I too successively follow their practices. So please sit down. Now let's read through the rest of the text for our third chapter. In order to further increase it from now on, those with discernment who have implicitly seized an awakening mind in this way should highly praise it in the following manner. Today my life has borne fruit. Having well obtained this human existence, I've been born in the family of Buddhas and now am one of Buddha's children. Thus, whatever actions do I do from now on must be in accord with the family. Never shall I disgrace or pollute this noble and unsullied race. Just like a blind man discovering a jewel in a heap of rubbish, likewise, by some coincidence, an awakened mind has been born within me. It is the supreme ambrosia that overcomes the sovereignty of death. It is the inexhaustible treasure that eliminates all poverty in the world. It is the supreme medicine that quells the world's disease. It is the tree that shelters all beings wandering and tired on the path of conditioned existence. It is the universal bridge that leads to freedom from unhappy states of birth. It is the dawning moon of the mind that dispels the torments of disturbing conceptions. It is the great sun that finally removes the misty ignorance of the world. It is the quintessential butter from the churning of the milk of Dharma. For all those guests traveling on the path of unconditioned existence who wish to experience the bounties of happiness, this will satisfy them with joy and actually place them in supreme bliss. Today, in the presence of all the protectors, I invite the world to be guests at a festival of a temporary and ultimate delight. May gods, demigods, and all be joyful. So having generated bodhisattvas and those who have taken the bodhisattva vows, when you say may gods, demigods and all be joyful, it shows that you should reflect on bodhicitta, meditate on bodhicitta. If there are people who sometimes say that they have been harmed by gods and demigods, spirits and so forth. So unless the gods are foolish, how can they harm you, you who only think of benefiting others? So for someone who practices bodhicitta, how can these dead spirits and so forth think of harming them? So once I was invited to a school in Lower Dharamsala, they told me that there was some kind of a spirit which knocks on the doors and opens the door in the night. And so I went there. I didn't, of course, I didn't want any prayers. to do Tharma offerings. But I went there since they invited me, although I didn't know any ritual to exorcising rituals. I still went there. So I just thought, meditated on bodhicitta, all these spirits who try to harm others, they also want happiness and don't want suffering. And therefore, I felt compassion, and I meditated on compassion, and later on I heard that it helped. So I was not a disgrace to myself. And so sometimes people talk about some negative influences and spirits and so forth, harming them. So this is the main practice, bodhicitta. And if you think that there is some harm coming from spirits and so forth, you should advise them that it's all due to the self-cherishing attitude and also grasping at true existence and things. So with this we have done the bodhicitta and bodhisattva vows. Now next is the jenang, which comes within the tantric system. So the common path which is taught in the sutrayana must be the foundation. So the sutrayana practices are based on done on the basis of the gross level of mind. And so you may be able to go up to the 10th bodhisattva grounds through the sutrayana path. But the subtlest dualistic mind, this misconception and the obscuration to knowledge cannot be stopped without the tantric path. It cannot be overcome through the sutric path only, and therefore so you should make reach to the point where no temporary adventitious states of mind arise when. And so you should be able to cultivate the subtlest mind and energy and mind into the path. And so that is the main focus of Tantra. And so we have, of course, the four sets of Tantras. And then in the Nyingma tradition, they talk about the nine yanas. And mainly the practice comes in the internal tantric practices of mastering mastering the mind. And so the jenang here comes from the Kriya Tantra. The main deity of Kriya Tantra is Avalokiteshvara, as we talked about Avalokiteshvara and Shariputra during dialogue in Heart Sutra. So Avalokiteshvara, the practice of Avalokiteshvara is meant for increasing and then furthering your practice of compassion. So Avalokiteshvara is the deity who embodies all the compassion of all the Buddhas. So in that sense, the Avalokiteshvara is not a different continuum or separate continuum from the Buddha. But for us, as individuals, when we do practice on Avalokiteshvara or Manjushri and so forth, when we become a Buddha in the form of Avalokiteshvara or Manjushri, then we are a different Avalokiteshvara or Manjushri, separate deity from the Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha. Otherwise, when we talk about deities, sometimes I tell this story that there was a lama who was giving a teaching in the past in Tibet, and then one of the disciples asked the Buddha, whom we consider to be very sacred, where is he? And then the lama may have been, must be poorer than me. So, as for me, I'm able to explain what are the four Buddha bodies and so forth. But this lama sat quiet for some time and then pointed his finger up in the space and said, the Buddha is up there in the space in a crystal, radiant in a crystal palace. So didn't know. So when we think about the deities of the mandalas and tantric deities and so forth, we think as if they are somewhere up there in some pure field and have this notion that if we make prayers to them, they would bestow these blessings on us. And so when we talk about the blessing, the Tibetan term is Chinlap, which here Chin has the meaning of splendor or magnificence, and Lap has the meaning of changing. It's like the waves or the ripples that are on the surface of the water, which always move and change. And so Lap has the meaning of changing. And so in science, they talk about the light waves as well. And so the Qin has the meaning of magnificence and love, the changing. And so here, when we talk about receiving blessings, our Avalokiteshvara has acquainted with for eons and eons. Acquainted his mind with altruism and generated bodhicitta for the benefit of sentient beings, went through the bodhisattva practices for the benefit of sentient beings and became enlightened for the benefit of sentient beings. And therefore, when we come across in Lamrim, except in the cases of being blessed by some higher beings, so there is some meaning to it. So, because if you think about Avalokiteshvara and Bodhisattvas and so forth, and how they have become enlightened, they have what kind of processes they have been through, then you'll see the significance of receiving their blessings. And so their blessings, their power, or would be like the Qin or the magnificence. And then the main thing is their advice that they give to us. And by using those advice, when we make transformation within our mind, then that is the meaning of changing. And so, when we talk about blessing, what it actually should be understood is to make transformation within our mind, and nothing else other than that.
So usually, I always tell people, the way of Buddhist approach is utilize human intelligence.
Maximum way, through that way, transform our emotion. That's a Buddhist way of approach, not just the faith. Use our intelligence and try to analyze the reality. Through that way, change, transform our emotion.
When it comes to secret mantra jnana, as I explained earlier, is what we use is these indivisible body, speech, and mind at the subtlest level. The subtlest body, speech, and mind are what we use in the practice. And so by not only accumulating merit and wisdom through the practice of bodhicitta and wisdom realizing emptiness, but also in Tantra, we even do deity yoga practice, wherein we meditate and visualize a body of a Buddha, ourselves, our own body, into the body of a Buddha, and then meditate on emptiness. And here we meditate on emptiness, and then that's absorbed, the mind, which is totally absorbed in emptiness, transforms into the deity whom we may visualize. And so the Dharmakaya, resembling the Dharmakaya, we do the meditation on emptiness, and then from within that empty state we arise into a deity, and then therefore you meditate on the body of a deity to accumulate merit and also wisdom, so that we attain that goal of enlightenment, wherein the body and the mind of a Buddha are undifferentiable. So in the same way, we also bring that resultant state into the path. So, while you take your tea, I will do this ritual for making Dharma offering to drive away the evil forces. So having driven away the evil forces who might otherwise hinder this initiation process, now a Vajra fence is created around this place to make a mandala offering. So in the Nyingma tradition, they talk about the distant lineage of Kama, and then the near lineage, and then the visionary, profound lineage of visions. Pure visions. Within the pure visions, there are pure visions which appear in one's meditation and some kind of experience. And then there are pure visions which appear to the sensory perception. For example, the Shariputra had saw Avalokiteshvara. So this vision, pure visionary teaching lineage, comes from Dakpo. Dakpo Rinpoche, one of the Dakpo Rinpoche. So there are stories about him from India, when he was born in India. And then many of the Dakpo Rinpoches had visions of Dara. They have very unique connection with Dara. And they were Rime, the non-sectarian. So this comes from one of the visions of one Dakpo Dorje Chang. So he was someone who had clairvoyance. So when he had clairvoyance, what happened was it didn't happen just direct as a direct experience. and with his mind, but during the time of the 7th Dalai Lama, the Jangye Rebe Dorje, 7th Dalai Lama, and Dagbu Dorje Chang were friends. And so the Dagbu Dorje Chang was known to have clairvoyance, and one time Jangye Rebe Dorje asked him, "If you have clairvoyance, what is in my shirt?" And Dagbu Dorje Chang said, "You have a rosary made of skull or bone." And Jangye Rebe Dorje asked him, "How do you see these things in your clairvoyance, through your clairvoyance?" So it seems that he had first to meditate on the thing that he wants to know, and then some vase appears to his mind, and then whatever he needs to know appears on that vase. And so Jangye Rebe Dorje had said that it seems that there is some difference in the physiological differences in different meditators which give rise to such experiences. So in the 1960s, I knew an American guy who used to make helicopters and so forth. So he was interested in the Dharma, and he told me that he had telepathy, knowing other people's minds. And I set up some thought in my mind, and I asked him what I was thinking, and he told me something, but it was wrong. So there are people who pretend to be knowing things. I wanted to share one thing, although we are running out of time. Royal
Albert
Hall. So in England, I was once giving a talk in Royal Albert Hall, and I told to the audience that some of you may have come there thinking that Dalai Lama has some miracle power. That is wrong. But some of you may have come thinking that Dalai Lama has healing power. I told them that's also nonsense. And I told them that I don't believe in healing power, by the way. And if there is someone who has healing power, who is a healer, I need to heal this itching on my neck.
So I just expressed, you see, if there is someone
authentic sort of person who have healing power, then I would like to show I have some problem here, itching. So then next day, some company sent me some ointment for the itching. So that's a real blessing, real healer. So it is that. So here, Lama.
So imagine the Lama in the form of Arya Avalokiteshvara, as it is shown in the Thangka. In the center is Avalokiteshvara, on the right is the green Tara, and on the left of me is Ekajati. So with regard to the vision that Dagbu Dorje Chang had, it says in this text, it has come from Mitajoki, the great Siddha, in which so Dagbu Dorje Chang had a vision of Mitajoki. So the vision happens to Deva Wangpo, and his next life was Gawang Pema Sherab. At the age of 22, he went to Potala Palace, and the Podala paradise and receive this vision. So, so imagine Avalokiteshvara with the two goddesses to the right and left, Girintara and Egazati, respectively. And they are surrounded by Buddhas, Bodhisattvas of all the different tantric sects. And I received this from Dada Rinpoche when I was small. I received this one, and also I did Jidamani retreat on Jidamani Tara, and also on the basis of this Genresik, I may have recited the 600,000 Om Mani Padme Hum mantra, the six syllable mantra. So, for the purpose of taking this initiation, imagine me in the form of Genresik in the center and two Taras to my right and left. And also imagine these three deities in the mandala altar. So imagine, please take the Bodhisattva vibes. Through the Buddha, Dharma, and Highest Assembly, I seek refuge until I reach enlightenment. To fulfill the interest of oneself and others, I shall generate the mind for awakening. Having generated the mind for highest awakening, I shall invite all sentient beings my guests. I shall engage in the delightful practice of Bodhisattva. May I attain Buddhahood to benefit all sentient beings. I seek refuge in the three jewels. I confess all misdeeds individually. I rejoice in the virtuous deeds of all beings. I take to mind Buddha's enlightenment. To the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, I shall seek refuge until enlightenment. To fulfill the interest of oneself and I shall generate the mind for awakening. Having generated the highest bodhicitta, I shall invite all sentient beings and engage in the bodhisattva practices. May I attain Buddhahood to benefit all sentient beings. Repeat it for the third time, the secret refuge in the three times. As one has all misdeeds individually, I rejoice in the virtuous deeds of all. I take to mind Buddha's enlightenment to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I seek refuge until I reach enlightenment to fulfill it once. I shall generate bodhicitta. Having generated bodhicitta, I shall invite all sentient beings. I shall engage in the life and practice of bodhisattvas and may Buddhahood to benefit all sentient beings. So those who have received an initiation into the, at least into the Kriya Yoga Tantra, then you should imagine yourself transforming into Genresik. And the three, and then to take the initiation. Those of you who have not received any initiation before, you should imagine Genresik appearing in your on your crown. So you should visualize or meditate on the selflessness or emptiness of yourself as well as all other sentient beings and your psychophysical aggregates, thinking that they all lack any independent objective existence. Just, although they do appear to have some objective existence, they do not have. They do not exist objectively. And so, with this mind absorbed in emptiness, transforming into yourself as Avalokiteshvara. So you dissolve into emptiness, meditate on emptiness, and dissolve yourself. Just as it is said in Ratnavali of Nagarjuna, a being is neither the elements, earth, water, fire, and wind, space, and consciousness. If a person is not any of these, what is a person? A person is designated on the basis of these elements, the six elements. And so although things do appear to you as if they have some objective existence, they are devoid of such an existence. So meditate on emptiness, and from within the state of emptiness, you arise into Genresik, resting in the nature of mind. With one face and two hands, in his right hand is holding of the rosary, a crystal rosary, and the left hand resting behind his body, and from the left hand arises a lotus, and then on his right is the green Tara, on his left is an Ekajati. Black or dark blue in color. And so first you make request for the blessing of the body. Please repeat. Please bless, give me the body, blessing of body. So rays of light come from the Lama's heart. It strikes the heart of the deity in the altar. And then from his heart, rays of light go out into the 10 directions, and all the blessings of the Buddha, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas come down. And these blessings come into you as Avalokiteshvara on your crown, and then the rays of light are emitted from it, and then your negativities of body are cleansed, and thereby you receive the blessings of the body of Avalokiteshvara. Now, please make this request for the blessing of speech. Please bless me, give me the blessing of speech. So, making this fervent prayer or request. So again, the same process of rays of light radiating from the guru's heart, striking the heart of the guru, the deity in the altar, and then rays of light go out into the 10 directions. They come down in the form of blessings, and they enter and dissolve into the syllable at your throat, cleansing all the negativities of your speech, and you receive the blessing of speech of Avalokiteshvara. Next is a request for the blessing of mind. Please give me the blessing of mind. Please bless me. Give me the blessing of mind. With this fervent prayer. Now, from the heart of the guru and the heart of the deity, the Avalokiteshvara in the altar, rays of light go out in the form, and they invoke the blessings of mind of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. They come down in the form of Hum syllable, and they dissolve into the heart of the disciples. From this Hum syllable comes nectar, and cleansing all the negativities of your mind, and you are blessed with the compassion of Avalokiteshvara, so that you become very gentle and peaceful. In this way, you receive the blessings of the mind of Avalokiteshvara. Now, the blessing of body, speech, and mind collectively. Please make this request in order to liberate me from all the lower realms. Give me the blessings, all the blessings of you, O compassionate one. So, with this request, the rays of light go out from the Lama's heart as well as the deity in the altar, and then they invoke the blessings of body, speech, and mind of all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. These blessings come in the form of Om Ah Hum Swaha, these seed syllables as well as the alphabet and the alphabet and consonant, the vowels and consonants, and they dissolve into you so that you are blessed in order to it, so that your body, speech and mind, the subtlest body, speech and mind, become cleared of all negativities, all defilements, and you receive the blessings of body, speech and mind, so that you attain you receive the blessings for attaining the highest goal of body, speech and mind of Avalokiteshvara. So when I touch this dharma, when I do the gesture of touching this dharma with the deity, portrait of deity on top, I will make a prayer to Jendrasik and his the deities flanking him. And so as I mentioned the name of the lineage lamas of this particular Jenang, the lamas dissolve one to the next below him, and then in this way finally the lamas dissolve into the Avalokiteshvara, and then a replica of Avalokiteshvara comes forth and dissolves into you, thereby and you receive the blessings of Avalokiteshvara. All the blessings of Avalokiteshvara's body, speech and mind. So these are the lineage lamas, the names are being mentioned, so you should imagine them dissolving into the next. So this is Dr. Rinpoche, from whom His Holiness received his initiation, this Jenang. So His Holiness is saying, may all the lineage lamas and the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas bless these disciples. So Midazoki and Avalokiteshvara are being one and the same. So Zahong Pam Ho, the replica of Avalokiteshvara and the three deities come forth and dissolve into you. Next is giving the mantra transmission. So either you have imagined yourself as Avalokiteshvara with the two deities flanking you, or you imagine you have imagined these three deities on your crown. So imagine this. So this mantra has come out of the gurus and then enter your body. Om Mani Padme, please repeat. Please, Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Arya Tare Tam Soha. Om Arya Tare Tam Soha. Om Arya Tare Tam Soha. Om Ega Zati Hum Soha. Om Ega Zati Hum Soha. Om Ega Zati Hum Soha. So this is stabilizing the blessings of Avalokiteshvara and the two deities. So whatever negative actions you may have created, such as the five heinous actions and so forth, the deity in the vision of, but so it is said that when you, on the basis of doing bodhisattva, generating bodhicitta and cultivating wisdom, realizing emptiness, if you receive this blessing once, you'll be saved from birth in the lower realms once.